Good morning and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Life has hardly been slow these days. The holidays are behind us, but we're still struggling with a difficult pandemic and the Black Lives Matter social justice movement. And last week we watched an insurrection in the U.S. Capitol that shook democracy and left several people dead. While money is never as important as human lives, working out Alaska's state budget for 2021 and 2022 may be yet another trauma for us. Budgets are complicated and not fun, but they aren't impossible, and we have some help. Cliff Groh, who has spent 40 years working to come to grips with how Alaska handles its budget, is our guest today. In his latest civic venture, Cliff has produced a guide to Alaska's imminent fiscal crisis. In a tribute to editors, he has three versions: the book length, the booklet length, and the pamphlet length. We have a link to Cliff's site where you can download them for free. In each, you can learn where our money comes from, where it goes, and how much we have left. And he offers his best suggestion for putting the state on a sustainable financial path. We'll talk a bit about the governor's proposed budget and how it approaches the fiscal crisis. As always, your comments and questions are welcome throughout the program. We hope you'll join us and help us unravel this really complicated but very timely state budget situation. So I'm going to welcome Cliff. Welcome, Cliff.
Thanks, Kathleen. Really happy to be here.
Very happy that you're here, and I'd like to, our listeners to know that you really gave me some significant tutoring help here to understand these things that might be hard for the average citizen trying to put, you know, food on the table and a roof over their house to come to grips with. But it's, as you're going to point out here in the show, this is the year, at least in your view, that we've got to deal with it. I want to welcome our listeners to perhaps participate in this conversation by giving us a call at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. And statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And of course, we'll be checking email at hometown@alaskapublic.org to see if we have questions coming in for Cliff. Cliff, the first thing I wanted to do here was to remind people to go to our website, because we've got links to things we're talking about here, including the governor's proposed budget, some of the really good local journalism coverage of the proposed budget. It came out in the middle of December. Also, just to kind of just, you know, the Cliff Groh name, it's a big name in Alaska, but I needed to sort of find out a little bit more. You told me your folks came in the 60s to Alaska?
50s. Early 50s. 7 years, you know, around 7 years before statehood.
Yeah.
And fought hard for statehood.
Yeah, and that you told me that your folks were very staunch Republicans, but they raised a staunch Democrat.
It's a fact. Yes.
And among the things that I learned, you know, your career, your academic career, you went off to Harvard, and while you were there, you wrote your senior thesis on ANCSA, and because you knew Ted Stevens and maybe even played with Ben Stevens growing up, he gave you a desk in his office in the Senate while you were doing a little work over there. So, you know, sort of well-connected with the founding folks for Alaska. And you actually got your law degree from UC Berkeley's School of Law, Bolt Hall, I guess it's called, right?
Then called, now called, Berkeley Law. Correct.
Okay, okay. And then you came back, and, you know, you were a lawyer for, what, 30 years?
More than 30 years, correct, yeah.
Yeah, but before that, you were working in the legislature, which kind of, as a one of the deep state, right? One of the people working.
As a person who worked the year that I helped create Permanent Fund Dividends, I voluntarily worked on half pay. And worked harder than ever had in my life. I did not think of myself as a member of the deep state.
I know, I'm joking.
Or may I not hurt.
I'm joking.
Right. But yeah, I worked the legislature both before and after I became a lawyer.
Yeah, and to me, two things were significant. You were there with the writing of the way the permanent fund dividend would work, right, in 1982 with Jay Hammond, right?
Yes. I was the legislative staff member who worked by far the most on the creation of the dividend we have today.
Yeah, and then about 5 years later, you were working with the Commissioner of Revenue, creating the first approach to oil taxes.
Not the first. We've had a bunch, but a very significant change that was adopted in 1989 that raised oil taxes on net while lowering some taxes on some fields.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, given how difficult this topic is and how difficult it is for people to sit down and come to an understanding of it, I said to you, so, Cliff, this is a nonpartisan approach to the budget. And you said, no, it's a multipartisan approach to the budget. And I think that's kind of a key to the way you're looking at it, which is, you know, not one silver bullet here, but more or less a smorgasbord of smaller parcels that are solutions to the puzzle. But before we get there, because we're in this show, we are going to work our way to Cliff's most recommended approach from his 40 years of looking at this. But we're also going to look a little bit at the governor's budget and try to understand what's happening in that budget. It's very early. The legislature goes back, I think, January 19th. They're still organizing themselves. So we're early in this year's process. But I just kind of want to, you know, just in case people are listening and say, yeah, well, I don't know if I can listen to all this money about this talk about money. I just want to say, Cliff, how bad could it be? Your booklet has an airplane flying into a cliff, an illustration by Peter Dunlap Scholl, whose work is in all of your long, medium, and short versions of this. And his description is, you know, controlled
flight into terrain.
Yeah, controlled flight into terrain. In other words, we know what we're doing, and we are flying right into the mountain. So, you know, I told people we were going to do this show, and questions came up like, well, what happens if the state goes bankrupt? So let's start with you, Cliff. How bad could it be? Why are we in this position?
As a guy who's been a lawyer, was a lawyer for a long time until I took retired status this year with the Bar Association, we can't technically go bankrupt, Kathleen, but we could be under various court orders. We could have one of the bad outcomes besides, you know, maybe having, you know, 55 children in a high school classroom reduced use hours on the, parks or Glen or Seward highways, right?
Reduced hours?
Well, maybe that there'd be a decision of, hey, we can't have trooper coverage, between, midnight and 5 a.m., so we'll just close down the highway. That'd be cheaper. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just talking about what real bad outcomes could be.
Mm-hmm.
There also could, because of various constitutional mandates that are in our Alaska Constitution, of certain things the Alaska legislature must provide, there could be court orders that would come out where you'd have the state government operating substantially through the operation of court orders and sort of a receivership sort of situation. It wouldn't be precisely bankruptcy, but more like having to administer your school system or your correctional system through the direct orders of a court. These kind of things have happened sometimes in other states.
Cliff, could it lead to privatizing a lot of government functions?
Certainly, that's one possibility, and to substantially less, services for Alaskans. You've already seen, Kathleen, the efforts to reduce DMV hours or close down some offices in some parts of the state, making it harder for people to, get or renew driver's licenses, for example.
Right.
A real practical thing that the people of Alaska need from their state.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe we should say, how did we get here? Because this we were gifted with a lot of oil, and we were really having a good time for quite a while. But explain how the income from oil has dropped and why.
Yeah, the state of Alaska got some giant gifts. The biggest one of all was the discovery of the giant Prudhoe Bay oil field that was announced in early 1968. And then, of course, the pipeline came, and the influx of oil money transformed both Alaska's economy, but also, critically, its fiscal system. And the state of Alaska could have responded in a number of ways. It could have said, well, we're going to save all the oil money and, try to, use it, just, live off it over time, right, and you live off the interest or the earnings. But the state of Alaska made a different decision and did create a permanent fund, but only saved a portion of the oil revenues, more like 10% of them. It's 25% of the oil royalties, but that's really closer to 10% of the total income stream or the total stream of oil money that the state got that was saved as a mandatory matter. And then the state of Alaska critically did not, unlike some other places like Norway and North Dakota, when big oil money came in, they didn't preserve their regular fiscal system, right? Mm-hmm. State of Alaska decided, we decided instead to repeal our individual income tax in 1980, which was a critical source of funding for the first the territory of Alaska and then the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska, the territory state, had that for more than 30 years, and it got repealed, and that used to provide up to 40% of the state's general fund budget. And so then with $0 coming in from that tax now for more than 40 years, we hitched our wagon just firmly to oil, and then oil, of course, has sunk.
That is dramatic. I mean, some of the data you gave me is amazing. What we're taking in now is less than we were taking in before the pipeline?
We're now getting the oil revenue this year for the fiscal year that starts on July 1st is projected to be the lowest in more than 40 years, whether or not you adjust it for inflation. It's like 75 one way, 75 one way, and 78 the other way. But more than 40 years, it's been more than 40 years since we're going to have oil revenue this low. I don't know about you, Kathleen, but I look substantially different 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
Yeah. I put a link to one of your articles in the Anchorage Press about, what is her name? Is it Jennifer Granholm?
Yes.
Who is currently being considered for energy secretary. But you tell the story of her being a young college student and really being popular and deciding she could have a Hollywood career and goes to Hollywood and after 3 years says, well, I guess not, and goes to college and gets educated and has a fabulous career as an attorney general in Michigan, I think, and the governor.
Governor of Michigan.
And the lesson you're making here in that article was you can't live off your natural assets, right?
That's sort of like Trudeau Bay for Alaska was sort of like Jennifer Granholm's, degree of cuteness when she was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And she figured out after 3 years that, this is not enough to make me a Hollywood star or even a working Hollywood actress. I got to pull the plug and go to college and, try to make, a life for me that is more realistic and sustainable. That's just kind of the decision Alaska has to make.
Yeah, right.
Sort of like Alaska right now is sort of like, if Jennifer Granholm were like 45 years old and still the funniest, maybe the funniest tour guide or waitress in Hollywood, as opposed to governor of Michigan and then probably going to be the next Secretary of Energy, and Alaska sort of needs to be as mature and sensible mature stage as she was at age 21 when she figured out, I got to go to college.
Yeah. I think you said we have to do at age 61 what she did at age 21.
Right.
Reassess. For our listeners who've just joined us, I just want you to know we're speaking with Cliff Groh, whose latest civic endeavor is a booklet. In three sizes, the book form, the booklet form, and the sort of pocket pamphlet form that explains Alaska's imminent fiscal crisis. The picture on the front of it is an airplane flying into a mountain, a cartoon by Peter Dunlap Scholl. Controlled flight into terrain is what they're calling it. And so Cliff's point is this is the year that we might be able to pull the nose up, perhaps, but how do we do that? That's the discussion we're having today. If you want to join us, give us a call at 550-8433 or statewide. It's 1-888-353-5752. And we're checking the email. I do have one listener comment who's frustrated because wants to point out that Governor Dunleavy got a degree at UAF, but then proceeded to and is still interested in cutting the university. So just one citizen's comment about politics right now. So let's see. I really wanted to sort of paint the picture. What else do you think we should lay out for people? I mean, what's coming down the pike, I think, and we'll talk about this in the next segment when we look at the governor's budget a little bit, are big changes.
Correct. And Kathleen, we've done a lot of cutting of the budget in the last 7 years. We've done a whole bunch of spending of savings. And now a lot of people, including me and Governor Dunleavy, recognize that we need to raise revenues, although he doesn't like to use the words taxes. I will. And we have And we need to act now, Kathleen, because every year we fail to address our giant problem means higher taxes or less services in the future.
And services are things like ferries, schools.
Like I said, roads, schools,
public health,
public wealth, social workers. And critically, and this is 25% of the budget is conventionally defined, goes to pay for K through 12 education in Alaska. So it's one out of every $5, and a lot of people need to think about that real clearly. One UAA professor who studied this a lot said, "Radcliffe, the only really big things to cut, if we're going to try to cut our way out of this, which he and I agree can't work, but he'd say you really would be cutting K through 12 education and public health."
Yeah.
Because there's people don't understand sort of what's in the budget. If you're going to leave dividends aside and not raise revenues, a cuts-only approach means a big focus on K-12 education and public health.
Yeah, maybe schools closing potentially, or a public health system that's not able to respond to something like a pandemic.
And Mat Su School District evaluated the Governor Dunleavy's proposed budget cuts in early 2019 and said they would result, if they're enacted, in some classrooms in our district having up to 55 students in a classroom. Mm-hmm. They said, we can't make that work. The fire marshal wouldn't allow us to have 55 students. We couldn't even get that many desks inside the classes. Mm-hmm. Classrooms are not physically large enough to hold 55 desks.
Yeah.
I haven't been in high school in a while, but that was my recollection of some high school classrooms I've been in. You couldn't get 55 desks in.
You know, I've got a caller, and I'd like to welcome Will onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Will.
Well, hello. I just want to thank Cliff for putting this information in an accessible form for me. That's something I appreciate very much, Cliff.
Well, thank you, Will.
And the other thing, back in the day, I was against the permanent fund dividends until I realized that without the dividend, the politicians would spend all the money if we didn't have that people were getting. And now it's become it's one of the holy cows around this town is to save the PFD. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I appreciate your efforts with all that.
Thank you very much, Will. And I guess I'd say that Alaska has both a complex fiscal system, but even more so, it's clear to me we have the most complex fiscal politics in the country, and that's because we have some unusual features of our government. We're the only state with a permanent fund dividend. We're the only state with a permanent fund that's anything like this. I mean, a large public savings account, anything like the size we have compared to the size of our population. And, of course, the special role of oil taxes in Alaska also makes our fiscal politics more complicated. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that we need to get beyond sort of a single-factor approach. Some people tell me we have to do only, like, they only care about one thing. And the problem we have now is it's like the plane's crashing, and it's like the pilot. I recently looked at this movie with Denzel Washington, plane crashing, and just how many things he had to keep in mind when it was happening. The Tom Hanks playing the Sully Sullenberger in the famous crash in the Hudson.
Yeah.
And Alaska's sort of like that. The big goal, of course, is to keep out of the water, keep from hitting the ground of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole bunch of features you have to focus on more than one thing in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, a challenge for some Alaskans, and I really want to help have people focus on that multi-factor approach.
Well, that's where why I said in the beginning that this is not so much a bipartisan approach to the budget, but a multi-partisan approach, because you do, and we'll get to this in the third segment, but you do sort of take a little bit of each of the, like maybe people have their holy grail or their silver bullet, and you're sort of suggesting there isn't one single answer. We're going to have to kind of nibble this thing back down to the water safely or something like
right.
that.
Right. It's a little like that. We're not going to land one giant whale or shark in the boat and we'll all be good forever. It's not going to be, a gas line that's going to save us. It's not going to be ANWR. It's not going to be giant new oil developments, as we've seen.
Oh my gosh! With that recent lease,
We're going the other way, as you're sort of pointing out, Kathleen.
Yeah.
And it would be bad for Alaska, is my contention, if we try to just solve this through cutting the budget alone, or just say, well, just eliminate permanent fund dividends only. We need to have a multi-factor approach to solve this deep problem, which is now so pressing.
Yeah. Well, Cliff, we're going to take a tiny break here. When we come back, we're going to just talk a little bit about what is involved in the governor's proposal, because it's complicated. And then we're going to talk about some of these multiple bits of potential solution that you see. And finally, in the third section, we're actually going to get down to your best thinking about what we should do. So you are listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And today we are looking ahead to Alaska's budgetary crisis that it has right now. And we have Cliff Groh with us, who has produced basically a handy guide to explain how we got here and potentially how we could get out of here. We would love to hear your questions. Cliff can answer a lot of detail, has given this a lot of thought. 40 years, I think, right, Cliff?
Yeah.
So 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And, of course, we're checking our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. You know, Cliff, before we get into the governor's budget, I just wanted to say, are you frustrated that you've been talking about this for so long? And you know, perhaps this is the year people will follow, but it's not. I mean, I can remember 10 years ago at UAA, you were giving talks and you even gave a class on this. How do you manage not to be frustrated, or maybe you are frustrated?
I like doing this. I feel that And know the state of Alaska and just being in Alaska has given a lot to me. I've lived here all my life, and I very much enjoy our state. And I have always been fascinated by the choices our state made and is making. And I like to do what I can to contribute to helping people understand where we are and the actual decisions available to us.
Mm-hmm.
So
just
so,
a commitment to the state.
Yeah, and I keep going.
Yeah.
And
you don't get mad at people who say, just cut the permanent fund, or just, you know, give it to the oil companies, or just cut government.
I try to work with everybody, like I worked with a tripartisan coalition on the original effort, successful effort to create permanent fund dividends. I worked with a bipartisan coalition when the big oil tax legislation was adopted in 1989, and I worked with a variety of people throughout my life, and so I try to use those skills what I've learned over the decades to try to help our state.
Keep us at the table. Let's just take a look at the governor's budget. He proposed it in, I think, about middle of December. We have a link to it on our website. It's like a 7-page document with the final pages, a big chart of dollars and everything. But he's laying out his approach. One of the things, I guess, what's the most important thing? The thing that gets me about it so much is that there's potential constitutional amendments necessary to do what he has in mind. A big hallmark of his approach to our situation is promising almost a $5,000 dividend. It would come in two packages. One, he's suggesting $1,900 maybe in March, and then after the new fiscal year starts, maybe an additional $3,000. So, you know, I guess, Cliff, explain to people that how our permanent fund earnings reserve is set up and how this changes. It's already started to change. We have the percent of value.
Market value, PMV.
Yes.
Right?
Let's talk a little bit about how it changed and then what the governor's proposal would.
Sure. So as we discussed earlier in this program, Kathleen, for a long time, from roughly about 1980 all the way up until about 2013, the state of Alaska relied very heavily on oil revenues from oil royalties and oil taxes to finance the government. Of course, it didn't have the individual income tax anymore because it repealed at the beginning of the period in 1980. Then that system, which relied heavily on getting large amounts of new oil money every year, stopped working because large amounts of new oil money weren't coming in every year because of the long-term decline in oil production in Alaska. We have less than a quarter of the oil goes through the pipeline every day than did back in the late 80s. And the substantial drops in oil prices, which are not expected to recover. And, you know, there's been also some complications introduced by the additional changes in oil taxes. But if you add that all up, we're in our ninth straight, you know, that system stopped working. So we switched to a new system starting in calendar year 2018 for fiscal year 2019, which is a system called percent of market value, which is using a sustainable amount of the permanent fund earnings each year to pay for, like, at schools, roads, social workers, things that and all these services that the state of Alaskans enjoy, troopers. And over two-thirds of the money in the state budget now to finance state spending comes from the permanent fund now, from a judicious and sustainable use of the permanent fund earnings reserve, about 5%. The formula for allowing for spending about 5% of the market.
And let me ask you, Cliff, does that 5% just go to government services, or does that also include the PFD?
The dividend as well.
Okay. So those two things are at war with each other, the dividend and
not only that, but all sort of everything's at war with each other, including the fact that we're an endowment state that doesn't have a big enough endowment to finance itself.
Right. Right.
Every other state has some form of a broad-based tax. Mm-hmm. You know, every other place you can drive or fly to around the country, whether it's a statewide sales tax or income tax or both, a number of states have both.
Yeah.
Alaska has neither, and so we are an endowment state, as one of my friends said, with the endowments too small to support us without us helping to pay our own way.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that was the first change to the PFD reserve ERA, the ERA.
Right, and a lot of people focused on the cuts and the dividends then, but it was also critical that we sort of another big change that's not as well understood, but is that we've gotten off the big oil money because we had to, wasn't coming in the same way, and we've gone into trying to use our savings in a judicious way. But we spent all, and then we spent also, or our strategy the last 7 years has involved spending all our other savings. So we've gone from having more than $18 billion in other savings to less than $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, Kathleen, who maybe have like a rock-solid connection to a paycheck, but it's usually considered a good idea to have a little bit of money in your savings account.
Mm-hmm,
like
sure.
Not spend down to like 20 bucks.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so that's a good idea in case something goes wrong, which can easily go wrong.
Let me say this, Cliff. So that was the first change. It was only in statute. It's not. It can
be
changed again. This idea that you hear all the time, people saying, "Well, we want." The PFD in the what do they call it? Not they don't want the reduced PFD. They want the one that's
full statutory dividend.
The full statutory dividend, and that is not possible given say taking 5% out of the earnings reserve.
No, well, not only that, but our regular budget is not.
Yeah.
You know, the conventional budget sort of. Our system doesn't work with the two things combined.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sort of three things combined. Having trying to live off your savings with a conventional budget and a reasonable conventional budget and plus full statutory dividends without additional revenues.
Right.
Those things can't. And a lot of people sort of like, and this is January, a month of like, people's resolutions, right? And the state of Alaska, for a long time, Kathleen, has been sort of like the position of a person who says, I've gained some weight, got to lose it. My plan is I'm going to go on a bold new diet, try it out, all chocolate cake all the time. And it's just not working, right?
And that's a reference to big fat PFDs, the chocolate
also,
cake?
Well, but big fat budgets, you know, sort of the without having, you could eat a lot of chocolate cake if you exercised 4 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
If you were sort of like at the gym almost more than the employees, right?
Yep.
You know, but that's not what people are talking about, right? I mean, and so we're getting the all dessert all the time approach, and that's just this recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to focus on the way we've made it work is spending of savings, and now we've, like I said, blown through all the savings essentially outside of the permanent fund.
And so I'm just going to read one bit from the governor's budget. By the way, we have a link to it on our site. There's also coverage in local media. This all happened in December, but it's coming to us, and now it's, if you haven't been paying attention, now's the time to kind of come up to speed. But this is just a reading from the governor's budget. The resolution proposed as part of this budget proposal will collapse the earnings reserve into the protected principal and constitutionally limit appropriations from the fund to no greater than 5% of the average value of the previous 5 years. So collapsing the earning reserve into the corpus, is that what that's saying?
Yeah, sometimes also called constitutionalizing POMV. We have a statutory POMV, and of course, as we Alaskans have learned, the legislature does not can always change the statute in any year.
Right.
The Constitution obviously takes a vote of the people in a longer time to change.
But collapsing the earnings account into the corpus, doesn't that open the corpus then?
No, if it's the corpus remain constitutionally protected under this proposal.
Okay.
Which, by the way, I have said I think that is a good idea, but that can't be that alone.
Uh-huh.
Right? And some people say, well, let's do that first and figure out what else happens. And I say, if you're going to have a radical restriction in choices as a forcing mechanism, you better well have a plan of how what's going to happen then.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Let me ask you this. If we were to go with the governor's proposal, I believe he also has a 50-50 split between state services and the PFD. How will that work?
Well, it will reduce dividends from what they would otherwise be. It would change the definition of what the baseline is for dividends.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, his proposal would cut dividends by $400 million per year from the current statutory baseline. I personally, Kathleen, have said that the current dividend formula and statute is not sustainable absent some other changes, and I think that it should be changed. I've never said precisely what it was, but I thought it would, end up with lower dividends in the statutory baseline. But he who ran on, full dividends and, paying more, paying back dividends, is now explicitly proposing, I think it's important for us to understand, Governor generally proposes to cut dividends by $400 million per year after fiscal year 2022.
So Cliff, help me. I $400 million. I don't get a PFD for $400 million. So what does it?
That's total amount.
I know. But what would it be for?
If there's about a little over 700,000 Alaskans, I think about 650,000 or so, or something less than that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get dividends. So it would be a reduction in dividends from what they would otherwise be. It takes about, I think paying every Alaskan a dividend is about between $650,000 and $700,000. So if you reduce dividends by, every Alaskan $1,000 dividend takes about $650,000 or $700,000. So if you reduce dividends by $400 million a year, you're reducing dividends by more than $500
mm-hmm.
Per person from what they would otherwise be.
So, we've seen dividends from, $900
sure,
to
–
they vary quite a bit, but it would be – in your view, with the governor's suggestion, would be a tapering down of the PFD over time?
Right. And what he also critically proposes is stopping budget cuts. Under his proposal, the budget starts to go up again after a couple of years, which I think is realistic, but not quite consistent with what sometimes he has said in the past. And then the governor proposes additional revenue of $900 million to $1.2 billion a year starting soon.
2023, right?
Yeah, starting in 2023, and that amount that he proposes to get in new revenues, which Cliff Grau will translate as taxes, is greater than his proposed cuts to spending, both dividend and non-dividend spending combined.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You know, I have, what else should we say about the governor's budget? Because I want to go to what the potential solutions are.
The governor's budget proposes massive overspending this year from permanent earnings reserve. Normally, the PMV system, there would be $3 billion that would go out. He proposes $6.3 billion
right.
instead, more than $3 billion more. It's a massive overspending of the permanent earnings reserve account and money from the permanent fund. I would liken that, Kathleen, to saying, I'm going to start my diet tomorrow after I have this giant collection of desserts tonight. It's hard to sort of start back up.
Well, it sort of sounds like we'd be facing a financial desert when we've
lost. There you go. Desert, not dessert.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Once the money is gone. I guess you would assume that we are looking at taxes, even in the governor's view, by 2023.
Yeah, he said he expects to start, getting this, giant amount of tax money in 2023, and he has said that he would, get the $1.2 billion in 2023, which is also difficult to square. Two things. First of all, it's the rumors are, and what has privately been said or suggested, is it's going to be a giant sales tax of more than $1 billion, which is way more than the state legislature's ever considered in the income tax. The House passed an income tax of $700 million that would generate $700 million a year, close to only about 60% as much as the governor's apparent sales tax proposal. But additionally, the governor thinks he's going to start getting the money in the fiscal year, which starts July 1st, 2022, when he wants to have a constitutional amendment on the ballot in November of 2022 that says, hey, Alaskans, do you approve new taxes?
Mm-hmm.
The timing, as Larry
timing,
Hirsch,
yeah.
other observers like myself point out, it's the timing that doesn't work out in the governor's proposal, as well as the specific money issues.
Mm-hmm. We've got about 3 minutes left before
sure.
we have to take a break, but let's talk about the pros and cons of a sales tax.
I would absolutely talk about I think that the two major taxes that have been talked about in Alaska are reinstating some form of an income tax like Alaska had between, as I said before, 1949 and 1980, or a sales tax. The key difference to understand is who would pay.
Mm-hmm.
Under an income tax, the people paying would be much more tilted toward higher income, wealthier people, some who make money in Alaska, whether they live in Alaska or don't. There are a number of people who make substantial amounts of money in Alaska who don't live here, not residents, that are physicians, surgeons, dentists. I personally fired my dentist when I found he lived in Utah. I just didn't think it was right.
Yeah,
Get my money out of state.
Right. When you look at oil field workers who are
commercial fisher people,
yeah.
all that. But I think that some of the highest income people in Alaska are. There are a number of them. I personally met a surgeon who made $5.5 million in net income in 1 year from work in Alaska. He lived in Alaska. But my point is there's a number of high-income people who either are residents or non-residents who make a substantial amount of money in Alaska, and that money is escaping taxation.
And we're not capturing it. And
right.
Another interesting point I read, about sales taxes, there are local entities that have sales taxes, but there is not a statewide sales tax.
Several reasons I tend to favor an income tax over a sales tax, although I think that we very much need a statewide source, maybe more than one source of revenues for our state that are broad-based, is that, as you point out, there are hundreds of communities across Alaska that have a sales tax. The biggest one doesn't, obviously, the municipality of Anchorage. But all kinds of other ones all around our state have them. Some of them range pretty high up, over 5%, and a statewide sales tax, we assume, would be layered over that and really hurt that. Another practical problem for a lot of smaller communities in Alaska is that the prices are way higher than, like, Bethel or Kivalina than they would be in Anchorage or Fairbanks.
And they would say they, if it's a 3% sales tax, we may pay 3% on a $2 milk container, but somebody paying $6 for milk is going to pay 3% on that $6.
Yeah. Way more. So it's also it would be a big problem for local governments if they got pressure from their local governments that currently have sales taxes. If their citizens said, "Hey, we got the statewide sales tax. Let's reduce our local tax," because that's what finances a lot of these local governments critically all around the country, all around their state.
Mm-hmm. Right. Cliff, we're going to take a tiny break here. We'll be right back. But you are listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today we're sort of doing a setup on the Alaska budget because it's our legislature goes back into session January 19th. Cliff Groh, my guest today, has painted a picture of a plane about to hit the mountain, nose in, and suggests that this is the year that we could potentially make the right kind of decisions that would help us pull that nose away from the terrain. So join us at 550-8433 or email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And Cliff, you know, we were trying to devote a little bit of time to explaining the governor's budget. I'm sure there's going to be a ton more discussion about that as the legislature comes into session. But I thought let's cover a few of the other kind of silver bullet ideas people have, like, well, let's just quit the PFD. Why would that not be a solution you would recommend?
Cutting the dividend, if the goal is to avoid taxing higher income Alaskans, strikes me as super regressive and unfair to cut that dividends of some 3-year old child in Soldotna or some person living on a very low income in outside of Fairbanks, so that some very high income Alaskans can avoid taxation. That strikes me as not
right.
The right.
And who may not even need the dividend, whereas there are people in the state that really need the dividend. What are some of the other silver bullet ideas? Raising oil taxes. We just had ballot measure one that failed.
I personally think in support a moderate increase in oil taxes, but I do think that a lot of people need to understand that in so many ways this is not 1995 or and certainly not 1981, where there's just so much money to be made from oil because of higher oil prices or in the higher production. So it's hard, even the sort of most dedicated oil tax supporters, and I am a supporter of increased oil taxes, recognize you can't solve Alaska's fiscal problems by just raising taxes on oil alone. Mm-hmm. It's a necessary but not sufficient component.
Yeah.
Of
another sort of mythical thing that's sometimes talked about is a bailout from the federal government.
There is going to be some money from the federal government. We have already gotten some. But the idea that Alaska is going to get a massive Alaska-only bailout to solve our fiscal problems from Congress is sort of like the idea of Cliff Groh and Kathleen McCoy being the most valuable players at the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's legal. It's just not, something you should bet any money on.
Yeah.
And like I said, we can't declare bankruptcy. We can't get a massive Alaska-only bailout.
Yeah. And let's see, diversifying the economy is something we always talk about. But that isn't going to happen fast enough or at the levels of income that oil ever gave us.
Diversifying our economy is desirable, and I have lived in Alaska all my life and have seen many, many proposals to do so. It's both hard to happen, and it's particularly hard for the state government to make it happen. In a way that is any way cost effective. So Alaskans just need to understand that, we're not going to spend a few bucks and, get Silicon Valley to pop up outside of Wasilla. It's just not, and if anything, if you were going to try to get some higher tech industry, you know, getting a good, strong universal Alaska is the better way and an important first step.
You know, Cliff, I've got a question from Rocky, who wants to know why the legislature has resisted an income tax. What is behind this resistance? He wants to know. In your view,
I would say sort of three factors. One is magical thinking. People think we don't need to think about it, that something else will swoop in and save us. Another factor is that a lot of the people most opposed to an income tax do not realize how little they would pay because just of the way it would be structured, especially a graduate income tax would be much more focused on getting money from higher income people. And third is some of the most powerful people in Alaska do know are high income and high wealth and do recognize how much they would pay and have a disproportionate amount of power with legislators and the governor.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume that those are three of the biggest factors of why we can't go back to an income tax like we had for the first 30 years, from 1949 to 1980, the way Alaska helped support itself for a long time before the big oil money started to arrive.
And Cliff, was that 3% on what you paid to the federal government or something like that?
Yeah, it's a little bit higher percentage, but yeah, mm-hmm. it was at various points, but it's a percentage of what was paid, and obviously that by itself makes it graduated because of higher income people paying more money than federal income taxes than others.
Yeah, another point on the diversifying the economy, I guess, if you have a state that isn't able to provide services, it's not an appealing place for business to come to. You know, isn't there sort of a spectrum there where you've cut services so much that it's not a desirable place, despite our beauty?
If you have lousy schools, people don't want to buy houses there, right? Because you can't live entirely on retirees, right, who don't have kids in school. So if you have lousy schools, if you have lousy roads, your new businesses don't want to, you know, start up in the state or in that area. And they don't want to, like, expand.
Yeah.
They want to figure out ways to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I have another caller who's from an email and asking. This person says, thank you, Cliff, for trying to explain this to us. And she writes that she has written to her legislatures and feels unheard and wonders what can the public do to truly have some influence in Juneau. Thoughts about that, Cliff?
I do think that testifying, writing letters, writing emails are all valuable things. And calling and working hard to sort of meet legislators in person to the degree it's possible in these COVID times or over Zoom and actually talking to them and reach out to them and express, hey, I don't want my school to go down the drain. Hey, I want my roads to sort of be, plowed better and, at a decent level and to stay
mm-hmm.
open
mm-hmm.
and say, we got to do address this and address it now and not just succumb to this failed disease of kicking this can down the road. You know, we've run out of road
mm-hmm.
and we're going for a cliff
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because just what has happened. And as you've sort of suggested before, Kathleen, COVID-19's made this worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's reduced the revenues and, frankly, it's made the longer-term outlook for oil more bleak, as, of course, climate change was already doing.
Yeah. You know, I want to welcome a caller and also say, Cliff, I want to save minutes at the end for you to just sort of say, here
sure.
are the elements that you suggest. But let's welcome Les Guerra on the phone. Hi, Les.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Cliff. Thank you for doing this. And if I missed, tell me if this isn't covered in the 5 minutes I missed of the show. There's two practical things for this to work. In 2017, our House coalition passed a full fiscal plan, so we wouldn't even have a budget deficit today, and we'd have $5 billion in savings. The practical thing is, in the campaign world, we were all attacked for doing that, for trying to rob people of their money, is what some of the ads said. And we lost Jason Grant as a legislator as a result of that. So folks have to realize you also have to campaign for the people you believe in, because those people who want a fiscal plan will be attacked by mostly outside money. And that's just the reality of American politics right now.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is, and I get this from a lot of people, why don't we just adopt an income tax or a sales tax? And it's now a math problem. The testimony when we passed our fiscal plan in 2017 was it takes 2 years to implement a sales tax or an income tax. We have a $1 to $2 billion deficit today. with only $500 million remaining in savings, which is why we acted in 2017, because we knew time was running out. So an income or sales tax, if that's the solution, well, number one, doesn't raise enough money to cover the deficit, so it has to be combined with something like a modest oil tax increase or something else. But also, remember, we're out of money this year, and those can't be implemented for 2 years. And it's just the mechanics of putting together the staff to implement an income.
Right, right. That is a point that Cliff made. It's not just a money problem. It's a time problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you for the show.
Thank you, Les. I want to carve out a little time for Cliff to, since he studied this so much. Cliff, give us your best guess at what might help us.
I think, and I'm going to run over these briefly, some we've already discussed, I favor a constitutional amendment to help keep the permanent fund and permanent fund dividend permanent, but recognize, as we've discussed before, couldn't get adopted until November of 2022. But I think that's an important step. I think we need a moderate, or as Les Guerra said, and thank you, Les, a moderate or modest increase in oil taxes. I think we need an income, a broad-based tax, either income or sales, that would capture income in Alaska, money that from both residents and non-residents. Between an income tax and a sales tax, I strongly prefer an income tax that would capture income earned in Alaska by non-residents, and also income made by high income people with higher incomes in Alaska, whether they live in Alaska or reside elsewhere. I think we need to continue to search for judicious budget efficiencies by maintaining budget discipline, but we can't solve this problem by cutting our way out of it alone. I think that it's Les and Larry personally and others and I have talked about the timing problem. We could maybe go with overspending of the permanent fund earnings reserve account for 1 year, but that must, Kathleen, be combined with other elements like passing these tax measures in calendar year 2021, this year in the legislature, because if you overspend the permanent fund, it's got to be a bridge, but it's got to be a bridge to somewhere. It can't just be, well, we'll keep spending it all until it's overspending until it's gone. And finally, something needs to occur this year, this kind of proposal, because we're going into this, we spent the other savings. Unless the plan is to spend all the permanent fund earnings reserve, eliminate dividends, and then spend all the, they don't get a constitutional amendment to spend all the permanent fund and then close up the shop on the state, we've got to go a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You do hear in people's emails and questions, this and even from Les, when the House passed a budget that was not did not go anywhere in the Senate in 2017. it gets back to the same question, and I guess I'm looking for you to, should there be hope that this can actually happen since we've been down this road for many years and not done it? Do you think there's something different about this year?
I'm hoping that Alaskans can maybe draw from the well of support that we gave each other through these COVID-19 times and the sense of responsibility and efforts to assist each other try to come together. In 1949, the Territory of Alaska was absolutely broke. The University of Alaska only stayed open by getting loans from private individuals.
Ouch.
So that's when they had an election and that big turnover in the legislature, and then they passed that income tax and passed some other taxes to save the territory. And that went a long way to helping encourage Congress to understand that Alaska was responsible enough and had enough money to support itself as a state, which, mm-hmm. Eight, nine, 10 years later. Well, Alaska needs a moment like that, where people look around and say, this is my state. I want it to save it. I want to fight for it. And we have to take some difficult steps to save it. And it's not somebody else's problem. It's my problem. I want to stay. I want to live here. I want to go to Alaska. Mm-hmm. And I'm specifically not directing my message to people who might be listening or not listening, who have already decided they're leaving Alaska in 2 years and maybe you've already bought their condo in Palm Springs on the golf course in a gated community. But what's troublesome, Kathleen, is that in many ways Alaska's fiscal system is set up for higher-income people and higher-wealth people who want to leave Alaska soon. And if you're like it, if you're like that, you're sort of okay now. But if you're not, which most Alaskans are not, you need to stand up and fight for your state.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you say that it's set up for people with wealth. Just talk about that just a little bit. Because we don't have an income tax, for example.
Right. Because we don't have an income tax or any way for, like, the that surgeon I had coffee with who made $5.5 million in net income in 1 year, they pay $0, not one penny, in broad-based taxes to help our state. And, you know, that guy, you know, drove over to the coffee shop on, you know, state-owned roads, you know, state-operated roads, maintained roads, and, mm-hmm. and used government services mm-hmm. you know, right and left. Mm-hmm. His office or house got burglarized, he'd be calling the police, or he goes out to his cabin and gets broken into, calling the state troopers, and he's not paying a cent toward that.
Yeah.
And I think in broad-based taxes for our state, and people in Alaska have to understand that we have to get to a fiscal system that works for all of us. It is, frankly, more like what we have in other states, because we're less unusual now, because the big amounts of oil money we kept getting new each year is just not happening. And yeah. so we have to adjust our behavior or face disaster.
Yeah. A couple points to make. On our website, we do have the dates and times mm-hmm. and places that you're going to be continuing to speak about
sure.
this. And I guess a lot of them are Zoom, but because of the situation we're in. And, you know, we have about 2 minutes, and I would like to hit your points one more time. It would be a modest oil tax.
Increase in a modest increase in oil taxes, a constitutional amendment to help keep the permanent fund in permanent fund dividend permanent, more than we have today.
Why do you like that, Cliff?
Because I think that otherwise we're going to get into what Governor Dunleavy proposes for this year forever until it's all gone.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That you have to take the punch bowl away
mm-hmm.
or the desserts away. But when you do that, you have to figure out what else you're going to eat or drink.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I propose also some tax measures, a moderate or modest increase in oil taxes, an income tax that would be for our state, a search for budget, continuing search for budget discipline. We did cut the budget by 43% in the last 8 years.
Yeah,
but
no kidding.
We got to have a continuing search for budget discipline. And if we're going to overspend the permanent fund, we have to have a plan so that that doesn't happen every year, that the binge can't go on forever,
mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you sort of binge until you sort of die of the overdose.
Well, there was an example. If, for example, if the governor's budget does take out, what is it, $3 billion from the permanent fund, that reduces the earnings over time. I mean, it actually has
an... Yeah, about 150, 160, more like $160 million every year because of the extra the first $3 billion of the $6.3 billion is like consistent with POMV rules of like helping keep the permanent fund from not shrinking. The next $3.3 billion he wants to take for this year would reduce, would increase the deficit and so lead to demand for higher taxes or less services to the tune of $150, $160 million a year forever.
Hey, Cliff, we are out of time, but I'm glad you got some of those details in there.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah, so I thank you so much, Cliff Groh. Please check out his Citizen's Guide to how to survive this fiscal crisis. Thanks to our listeners and callers. Next Monday is Martin Luther King Day, and this station will air national programming to honor this national hero. Hometown Alaska will return January 25th to talk to Alaska artists about how the Rasmussen Foundation wants to support them. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Ammon Swenson was our audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.